It's a big world.
Oh, wow! It's so bright.
And it's full of small businesses.
Isn't getting discounts great?
Yes!
Yeah, I got carried away.
Risk, reward, opportunity, responsibility. Small business drives our economy. And finally, there's a show talking about it. Think you can be your own boss? Stick around. You'll find out.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Here's Austin Hill.
This is the place where small business owners and independent workers come to talk every weekend. I am Austin Hill. Welcome to our world. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Take down our number and join us, 877-933-2484. 1-877-933-2484. We are open for business with your questions and comments about small business ownership, being an independent worker, being a freelancer, if you want to call it that, being an entrepreneur. We try to understand these issues of the economy and work and job creation as we see them through the lenses of our Christian faith. Bible has a whole lot to say about business and economics and work, believe it or not. It has more to say about those issues than it does about sex. There's a shocker for some. We try to see these issues through the lenses of scriptural truth. 877-933-2484 if you want to join our program. Still to come this hour, we'll get to some advice for retirees. As a matter of fact, I'll introduce you just a little bit to a lady who is a professional gerontologist. Her name is Di Patterson. That's short for Diane Patterson, but Di Patterson, who's online at DiPatterson.com, by the way, has her own small business website, but in some parts of our country, a gerontologist is licensed similarly as a counselor would be, but they specialize in aging and the elderly and retirees. And a part of what she does with her outreach as a gerontologist is help retirees who may be struggling, boomers in particular, who are struggling with inadequate funds. Hey, let's put your talents and your skills to work for the purposes of starting a small business in your retirement year. So get to that retirement business a little bit later this hour here on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Here's my question for you in this episode of our program. And you can think about this any way you want. If you are a small business owner, or just imagine that you were for a moment, or maybe you lead some kind of nonprofit organization, maybe it's a church or some sort of parachurch ministry or what have you. Does it matter to you the age demographic of the people you hire? Think about that. Does it matter to you the age demographic or the relative age of the people that you prospectively hire? Now, the reason I ask, and I'll elaborate on this a little bit later in the hour, we have the, took in some of the information about the latest job creation and hiring trends in our country that came out just a few weeks ago. And we had this trend. It's been going on for years. It continued steadily through the summer months. And that is that, we don't have enough jobs being created. That's something we talk about almost every weekend here on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. But B, most of the jobs that are created, they involve the hiring of somebody 50 and older. Hate to tell you that. And in some cases, depending on what month you look at, maybe it's 45 plus. But usually it's the 50 and 60-somethings that are getting hired at the expense of, some would say anyway, at the expense of hiring 20 and 30-somethings. So we have kind of a generational competition. I've never seen this before in my adult life, quite frankly, where the older adults and the soon-to-be retirees and even post-retirement age folks are getting the jobs and the younger workers simply are not. So there's a whole bunch of reasons for that, and I'll elaborate on some of that a little bit later this hour. But again, my question for you, does it matter to you the prospective age of a potential employee that you might hire for your business, your nonprofit group, what have you? Let's get the age thing out on the table, shall we? And no elephants in the living room that we step around and ignore. We're paying attention to what's going on right before our eyes and trying to see reality for all that it is. So let's talk. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We'll get your calls with comments on that and your other questions and comments. I'm here to help with that. Get to that in just a few moments. So we've had some tumultuous days on Wall Street, and As I've often pointed out here on this program, and I write about this whenever I can take the time to write an op-ed, I wrote a piece that published just earlier this last week at theblaze.com, a piece about the very tumultuous stock market and the allegation. I wouldn't say that this is entirely true. I don't believe it is. But it is alleged that the wobbling on Wall Street, so to speak, and the plummeting in prices and all the instability, it's all because of China. Well, there's a lot of economic problems in China. There are lots of economic problems right here at home as well. But I think if you watched any news over the course of this last week, it kind of illustrated a point that we talk about a lot here on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. And that is that just about all, nearly all of the business and financial news that there is to consume across the country, except for the local folks at your local newspaper, your local TV or radio station, to the extent that they're doing local business and economic news, the national stuff is all very Wall Street-centric. And if everything is just fabulous with the stock market and the New York Stock Exchange, well, it's presumed that everything's fabulous in your hometown and in your personal finances and with your family and whatnot. And if there's a wobble in the prices of stocks on Wall Street, well, my goodness, the sky is falling and we should all be suffering. There's a huge disconnect. That's just so wrong-headed on so many accounts. But there is a very dangerous and I think a very destructive and selfish disconnect between Wall Street, the view from Wall Street, and the rest of the world. Now, I went to one news website. I grabbed this audio. It comes from CNBC.com. And this is, I'm not bashing on CNBC. I'm a fan of CNBC. I rely on them for the financial and business news that they provide. They do a very professional job. But once again, they're headquartered in New York City, and they have a permanent operation. They telecast live from the stock market during the trading day every day that the New York Stock Exchange is open. So in some ways, they're kind of a part of the problem. They're very stock market, New York Stock Exchange, Wall Street centric. But just to illustrate the disconnect here, first of all, we have this analyst on Wall Street, and this is after, you know, the market opened up on Monday and the prices collapsed and nobody would dare call it a crash. That was the title, by the way, the opening title of my latest op-ed. None dare call it a crash. It was somewhat of a crash. Don't panic about that. I'm not saying to freak that out, but I'm not saying that to freak you out, but it was somewhat of a crash. But prices collapse on Monday, start to go up by the end of the trading day on Monday afternoon. They spike upwards on Tuesday, kind of level off. They've been bouncing around, and most of them have regained what was lost by the end of the week. But just before the stock exchange closed down yesterday, a gentleman, one of the anchors at CNBC, he does this expose and says, well, here's all the great things about the economic recovery. The quote-unquote recovery, you know, the one that we're supposed to be experiencing all over the country, right? The recovery that in many ways just isn't happening across America. But anyway, here's the analyst at CNBC. In this soundbite here, he actually quotes an economist from Wells Fargo Bank. And my goodness, they are just so optimistic and so rosy about things. Go ahead, Nathan, roll the audio, CNBC analyst.
So here are three things to watch. First of all, the dollar. If it stays strong, it'd actually be good for the economy. Gina Martin Adams over at Wells Fargo is one of them. She likens what's happening now to perhaps maybe what happened in the mid to late 1990s with a stronger dollar, relatively lower commodity prices, and stable U.S. growth. If that happens, we could see this rally continue.
Okay, so we think things, you know, are going to be the good old days once again, like the mid-1990s, and wow. And the economist, the expert at Wells Fargo Bank is saying, well, you know, this is the recovery is just rolling on. Well, here was the very interesting thing that happened, and it makes me wonder if maybe everybody at CNBC there in New York City is comparing notes and, you know, if the left hand knows what the right hand is doing. You know how that goes in your church or your household or whatever. Sometimes the left hand doesn't know what the other 37 right hands are doing. Anyway, another reporter from CNBC goes across town to the Bronx and interviews, guess what? Somebody managing a local small business. Now, we just got the view from Wall Street. Oh, you know, the recovery's going great, and, you know, we could be like the late 1990s again, and prices are stable, and the recovery's rolling on, and stock markets are good, and blah, 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 blah. Then they go out to the Bronx. Now, what was interesting is this reporter notes in her report. I cut the reporter's voice out of here, but she says, the Bronx may be a long way from Wall Street, but this business owner has something very different to say about the economic recovery. I don't know about you. The Bronx is a lot closer to Wall Street than I am. You know, close to Wall Street is a relative thing. Anyway, they go to the Bronx, which is a less wealthier, more impoverished borough of New York City, and they interview a lady named Ruth. Now, Ruth is a manager for a small chain, local, kind of a local specialty chain of coffee shops and diners in New York City. They're called Noni's Coffee Shops. Noni's Coffee Shops. They've been around for almost half a century. Never got bought out by a big corporation, started by a local family in New York City long, long, long time ago. Here is Ruth, who is not a native speaker of English, but here she is commenting on what the summer has been like and their outlook for the fall. Bear in mind, again, the analyst on Wall Street said, oh, the recovery is going great. Listen to what Ruth has to say. Roll it.
Very slow this June, July, especially August. If this continue and economy take a hit, yes, it will happen that we weren't able to pay the rent, and it's just going to look like lock up the shop and go home because it's really, really bad.
Okay, so there's Ruth, the manager at Noni's Coffee Shop. If things don't pick up, if we have another month or two like this summer was, we'll lock up the shop and go home. We won't pay the rent, and it's just going to be over with us. Our business is threatened. We'll have to lay people off and all that that entails because, as she said, it's really, really bad. Now, why am I bringing this to bear here? Listen, I am not here to bash on CNBC. I'm not here hating on the media. What I'm telling you, and I believe this is incumbent upon those of us who care about the call of Christ on our lives, that care about the functioning of local churches all across our country. If we care about the role of the church in our local community, if we really want to be as the scriptures would call us to be, if we really want to be, quote unquote, the hands and feet of Jesus, we need to be more discerning than to be duped into believing these reports that the recovery is just going fabulous. Wall Street is playing with other people's money. Wall Street is playing with economic stimulus from the federal government. It doesn't have to balance the books the way you and I do in our households, the way local small business owners do. They don't have to balance their budgets and make everything work out financially like a local church does. We have got to recognize the huge gulf of difference between the way things are portrayed to us in the dominant media and the way things really are. If we care about people in our church and our local communities and their ability to provide for themselves and their dependents, their ability to contribute to the local church, their ability to contribute to the local charities, our local schools and the soup kitchens and those kinds of things, we've got to get a hold of economic reality and see things for what they are. It's not nearly as I'm not saying the sky is falling, but it's not nearly as robust and rosy as most of the dominant news media would have us believe, and there's a lot more suffering than most people would like to admit. Let's go forward with our eyes set on truth, shall we? Now, here's our number. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Does it matter to you the age of the person you prospectively hire? Does age matter when it comes to hiring? If you run a business, if you work in a church, what have you? Give me your thoughts on that. Love to get your take on that question. And I'm here for your questions and comments. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Our program continues momentarily. Don't go anywhere.
This is the place where entrepreneurial minds meet. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. This is the show for business owners of today and tomorrow. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
And I'm glad you're with us. Thank you for listening. I'm here every weekend at this same time. Find our archived audio all the time at myfaithradio.com. That's our network website. and find more specific info about our program, it's austinsbigworld.com. Austinsbigworld.com. Smells just like it sounds. It's Austin Hills Big World of Small Business. 877-933-2484 is our number. Roxanne was calling asking about how one negotiates. And this is a tricky thing. How does one negotiate for increasing? She started off by saying, and Roxanne, if you're on the line, I'll give you my response here. We'll have you waiting on hold. She said, how do I negotiate a pay raise as an independent contractor? And what I would suggest, and interestingly enough, somebody brought this up in a call on the program just two or three weekends ago, but I would suggest that, first of all, if you work as an independent contractor, and I've been in this situation before, it can be very, very tricky, but if you work as an independent contractor, but maybe you're more accustomed to working as an employee, that is to say most of your history is working as an employee, I would advise, first of all, stop using the term pay raise. Because pay raise as such, that's kind of terminology, that's language that we would apply to an employer-employee relationship. And that's probably what a lot of us are accustomed to. I earn a certain rate of pay as an employee. I'd like to earn more, so I will request or I will negotiate for a pay raise. I think it's incumbent upon those of us who are trying to shift into working as a freelancer. Maybe we're in that freelance independent contract situation because we're forced into it. A lot of people find themselves in that situation, and it's can be very unnerving and very unsettling. It's a very different world than being an employee. You may do the same kind of work, but the circumstances under which you work are very different. But I think it's incumbent upon us when we make that shift into the independent contract labor force that we start thinking in terms of we are a business. And by the way, that's a loaded thing when you say, I'm a business. It has all kinds of legal implications. I'm always quick to point out, get legal advice. Don't enter into that terrain unwittingly and unknowingly. If you are not managing your finances properly, if you're not working as an independent contractor without the proper licensure and permits and those kinds of things, things required by your local city, county, state governmental authorities, you will, if you get caught, they will generally not only fine you for being out of compliance, but they will typically fine you retroactively. That is to say, they'll go back and look at the calendar and say, well, now, when did you start working as an independent contractor? Oh, well, it's been 18 months. We need to find you for being out of compliance for a year and a half. Get legal advice on these things. Make sure your legal ducks are in a row. But then, from there, back to the issue of negotiating for more money, once you are sure that legally you are set up as a business, even if it's just a one-person independent contract thing, start using the language of business. I'm not here to negotiate a pay raise. I need to talk to you about an increase in my fees. I've been doing this particular kind of work for however long it's been, and Roxanne, I hope this is making sense to your situation. I've been doing this for however long. I just want to make sure that you understand my costs have gone up or whatever the reason is, I need to increase my fee. And here's my proposal for our next contract. Now, one of the things that, this came up again a couple of weekends ago here on the program, Austin Hills Big World of Small Business. One of the things that I've experienced, and perhaps you have as well if you have experience with this, if you've worked previously for a particular business and you, let's say, once upon a time you were an employee and for whatever reason, either they're choosing or you're choosing or mutual choosing, it was agreed that you're no longer an employee, you'll be an independent contractor. It may very well be the case that your associates, even the manager or the owner of the business, continues to think of you and feel about you as though you are an employee. Oh, come on, don't give me this stuff. You're a business now. You're just our old pal, Roxanne, or John, or whatever. Okay? In other words, you need to be very strategic and careful about this. This has been my experience anyway, because if you make that shift, if you have made that shift from employee to business owner, and if you don't approach this gently and cautiously, if you just show up one day and say, I'm my own business person, and here's my fee increase, that may be a little off-putting. So those are some things to keep in mind, but it really has to start with you and with me. If I'm a business person, if you're a business person, we need first to start thinking and speaking of ourselves as though we are, and then we go forward. Beyond that, you're going to negotiate for more money. Find other clients that are interested in your services, because negotiations and agreements usually go your way. Maybe I'd say it this way. They generally don't go your way if you're not willing to walk away from the deal. So have other options. Our program continues in moments. Don't go away.
We're on the road to economic recovery, and we're headed towards your future. Now back to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
Thanks for being here. I am Austin Hill, honored to host the program every weekend at this same time on this great radio station. Find us anytime at austinsbigworld.com. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Yes, we talk about small business ownership and entrepreneurship and work and job creation and the economy, even on your favorite Christian talk radio station. What do you make of that? See, I'm just crazy enough to believe that Christians should be engaged in these discussions, and the church has a wonderful mission to fulfill if we would begin to learn some things about how basic economic works and how jobs are created, and encourage people to go after and find the opportunities. I mean, if we take the scriptures seriously, what the Bible has to say about work and the moral imperative of work, I mean, I would refer you to 2 Timothy chapter 5, the Apostle Paul writing to his understudy Timothy there at the foundings of the early Christian church. My goodness, the Apostle Paul says the person who is unwilling to work, not unable, but the person who is unwilling to work and to provide for their own family is as though they have lost their faith. Whew, wow. That's pretty heavy stuff, right? 877-933-2484 is our number. We're open for your comments and questions about small business ownership and being an independent worker. My question for you in this episode of our program, does it matter to you the age of the person that you might hire for a position, either in your business, your company? Maybe it's an open position at your place of employment, and you're not the owner, but, you know, the position's going to be filled. They're interviewing for it. Does age matter to you? And if so, why or why not? 877-933-2484. Linda is up next. Thanks for holding, Linda. Welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello. I think that age matters a great deal in hiring. Currently, we are looking for a part-time employee, another one to help assist in the business. An ideal candidate would be 40s, mid-40s, only for the reason that she would have teenagers, not little children, and possibly would be done bearing children. That would be the ideal. Who has come to our office, pardon me, for an interview is someone who is available. Is young, single, she is skilled, and she can make it to work in the winter. Mm-hmm. And you know what? She's probably going to get the job. So I say age matters. We prefer someone much more stable, one who's past the childbearing years, needs the job, can make it to work, has maybe doesn't need babysitting or has arrangements, as opposed to people in their women in their childbearing years, or, you know, younger guys, I guess. This is more for a female job.
Right. Very interesting. All right. So in your situation, then, when I speak of age demographics, you are presuming, and you make a very good case for this, but you are presuming that age demographics have a whole lot to say. They have a lot of implications for one's life circumstances, right? And is that a fair way to put it? Okay.
Yes.
Because the single young woman that you're looking at hiring for your company, your business, or what have you, as far as you can tell, she's fully qualified. She's got it going on. She's got all the qualifications, and she'll probably work out well. But it also sounds like you're assuming that there's some instability there because of the fact that she's single. Am I hearing that correctly?
You are. And she's also in the millennial generation. And that has its own ball of wax that accompanies it with their wanting to be transient, wanting to work in a situation. She claims to absolutely love this type of work. But, you know, if something came along better, or perhaps a marriage partner came along,
yeah, sure,
she might up and move.
Right.
Right. All right. Listen, you make a very compelling case here, Linda, and I appreciate the call very much. And thanks for listening to our program here on the Faith Radio Network. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. I just got IM'd on our Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business Facebook page. A listener is listening online at myfaithradio.com and asks, is what this lady is describing legal? I thought there were laws regarding hiring discrimination in regards to age and things like pregnancy. Excellent question, listener, and you know who you are. And that's let's unpack that here for a moment. Because by some people's definition, and may very well even be the case by technical legal definition, Linda, who just called in, I should have asked her what kind of business she was talking about, but some people would listen to that and say, well, you're being terribly discriminatory. How dare you do that, business owner? My goodness, you are not taking seriously a prospective job applicant simply because she's single and she's a millennial and she may fall in love and get married and want to leave sometime soon, or she may end up getting pregnant and having familial responsibilities. You selfish business person, you're discriminating. Well, okay, think that through. And if you're thinking those things, if you have, you know, if that's kind of the emotion that's welling up inside of you, I understand that. I believe that it's probably incumbent upon us in the Christian community in particular to be very careful and very discerning about these kinds of things. I would suggest, and I'm not an attorney. I am always quick to say I'm not an attorney. I'm not a tax accountant. I'm not an investment advisor. I own a small business, and I run my business, and I host a talk show, and I'm always quick to say, get legal advice for your business, for your nonprofit ministry, what have you. We've got resources to that effect on our program website at austinsbigworld.com. This is not legal advice at all. This is maybe moral and ethical advice for me, or at least moral and ethical reasoning, a bit of a challenge, if you will. I think those of us in the church need to start challenging and rethinking some of the assumptions that are made in our popular culture as to what defines, quote unquote, discrimination. Notice everything that I said, and even the listener that just IM'd me through Facebook and raised this this question here. Oh my goodness, this is discrimination against the prospective worker. Yes, but notice in all those concerns, there's really no thought to what might be in the best interest for the business owner. What about the case that Linda just made to say, listen, I just know a woman who is past childbearing years, her kids are out of the house, at least for a good bit of the day. They're at least in junior high or high school, whatever age demographic she says. Kids are in school during the day. She's not going to be needing to go home and, you know, change a diaper or something. That's better for my business. Don't the business owners have some skin in this game? Aren't there some rights, if you will, for the people who own the business? The people who invest their own money and their time and their talents and their labor and take all kinds of risks to grow a business? Shouldn't they have some ability to say, this isn't really going to work for me over here, but that over there, that'll work really nicely? I want to suggest to you that our popular culture and even the popular vernacular and prevailing attitudes in our culture just don't even consider the needs and the interests of business owners and employers. It's all about the employee, and I deserve this wage, and I deserve this health care, and I deserve this many weeks paid vacation, and I deserve a job, and if you don't hire me, you're discriminating against me. I'd like to believe that those of us who are thoughtful Christians trying to discern what it is to think and live and believe and act Christianly in a very tumultuous upside-down secular culture right now, those of us who are trying to be discerning Christians and follow Christ in this environment, I'd like to believe that we can do better than that. That we can see the interests of all involved, not just one side or the other. By the way, as long as I'm on the subject, this gets to the heart of something that I talk about regularly here on this program. Christians, church leaders, church pastors, pastoral staff, and lay leaders in the church, find out who the local business owners are in your community and ask what you can do to be supportive. They're suffering right now, and real people work real jobs at these small businesses and draw wages from them. And if the businesses go away, we all suffer. And as you try to do that, as you make that bold step to reach out to the local business owner, if you're coming to them representing a church, I'm the pastor of such and such, or I work in the ministry at the community church down the street or what have you, understand the business owners may very well be very skeptical and mistrusting of you at first. And the reason for that, I've seen this happen before in my own hometown. I've had business owners call and email me as a result of hearing this program and telling me their stories. They are skittish. They are fearful of people coming to them from a church, because more often than not, if anybody from a local church gives a whit about local small businesses, it usually happens when a pastor goes out with disgruntled workers and protests wages. And when pastor, think of the protests that you see on TV. Maybe you've seen them happen in your own hometown. People picketing out in front of a big box retailer or a fast food restaurant or what have you. Anybody sit down and ask the business owner, why do you pay the wages that you pay? How is your budget going? How do you determine the ways in which the wages are set? I don't think so. It's all very one-sided. In fact, I had a pastor, this is, oh my goodness, almost 2 years ago now, but I had a pastor call me during the week once, found me on our website at austinsbigworld.com. He said, yeah, I heard what you said about pastors getting involved in wage disputes and whatnot, but I am always on the side of the worker. And I said, well, tell me about that. And I suggested to him, we had a very thoughtful, a cordial conversation, but I said, Pastor, this is like trying to do marital counseling with only meeting with one spouse. You'd never try to do that. And the employer-employee relationship is not a marriage, no, but it is a relationship. So why are you siding with one spouse here? You know, you'd never go into the counseling office and say, well, I'm on the side of the husband and the woman's just wrong. And I sure hope you wouldn't go into the counseling office with the wife and say, yes, I know your husband's a terrible guy. Let's fix this. That's what you're trying to do with labor disputes, Pastor. I know this may be something you've never heard before, and maybe this never comes up in discussion in your church, and this just sounds weird. I would respectfully challenge you and everybody within the reach of my voice here, whether you're a layperson or a clergy person, your official church staff, or you're in the pew helping out on the weekends, let's be more thoughtful and discerning. Our culture is crying out for thoughtfulness and discernment, especially in this area of the economy and business and job creation. Some food for thoughts. Again, Linda, thanks for the call. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. More of your calls on the way. I'm here to help with your questions and comments about small business ownership and the economy and job creation. My question for you, does it matter to you the age of a prospective person that you would hire in your business? We'll get to more of that. Also, some thoughts on small businesses for retirees from a lady who is a professional gerontologist who consults people on aging and the elderly. Wow. How will we do it in the final 15 minutes? We'll make it happen. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, don't mind us. We're just talking about the most important part of the American economy. This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. We're creating our own jobs right here. This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
Thanks for listening. Find us anytime during the week at austinsbigworld.com. Join us live real time now at 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Back to your calls in just a moment. I wanted to play a little bit of an interview. This is just a segment of it. I had the privilege of interviewing a lady named Di Patterson, who can be found online, by the way, at dipatterson.com.
Di is short for Diana, obviously. DiPatterson.com. She is what they call, way out there in California, a professional gerontologist. Now, you're probably familiar with the word gerontology. That's the study of aging and the elderly, right? And a gerontologist is a person who's expert in that. Di Patterson. As a matter of fact, she was just, on the NBC Today show just a couple of weeks ago, and she's been getting a lot of publicity with some of the things that she's saying about the elderly and senior citizens, retirees, building businesses for themselves. She's got, you know, her thumb on the pulse, so to speak, of the portion of our population in our country that is saying, yikes, I didn't save enough for retirement. What do I do? Anyway, I recorded an interview within our studio just a few days ago. We'll have the full discussion on austinsbigworld.com a little bit later this coming week. But here's a portion of what she was describing. She starts, and this is very interesting. Boy, I've got a lot to say in reaction to this. But she starts off by saying, you know, retirees, if you want a productive and pleasant and enjoyable future in your senior years, you're going to have to, I think in this segment she says, you're going to have to get up off the couch and make some changes and start putting some plans into place. Anyway, a segment of gerontologist Di Patterson. Listen to this.
Gerontologists really deal with our age group is 60 and above. Mm-hmm. I always say, off the couch early. If you want to be a happy 60 to 85 and beyond year old, then you have to make some physical and financial and lifestyle changes early. But when I do get a senior who says, wow, I'm still interested. I really don't want to retire. And I kind of need the dough, but also too, I want to give back in my senior years as well as earn a small income or even a large income. So here we go. For seniors starting businesses, this. Okay. Number one, get your legal documents in order and your ducks will line up in their proper rows.
Okay.
It's very important to get some business counseling. Find out what it takes to get a DBA. Take and file the correct papers. The Small Business Administration gives free classes that anyone can attend and actually passes out the legal documents that you need to fill out to get going. And then through that process, you can really find out the safe and sturdy basis, foundation of your business life.
Okay.
Again, read. Get your legal documents in order.
And there's plenty of online services that would say, hey, you don't need an attorney. Just log on and swipe your credit card into your number here. We'll send you all the documents and you can do this yourself. I'm not saying that's altogether bad, but in your estimation, at what point is it incumbent or at least the prudent thing for a person, retiree in particular, to say, you know, I better make an appointment to meet with an attorney about this? Any thoughts on that?
Oh, yes. Wisdom says it costs pennies a day to hire a good attorney, good legal advice up front.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll not be sorry. Begin. It goes to your foundation. And do you want to stand on sand or a solid rock?
Yeah.
So as you are proceeding, I really encourage you, don't try to do it on your own because there are local rules, legal rules, and, you know, there's some quicksand that an attorney can help you stay away from. So I really encourage you to be smart, read, but when you have questions, write them down and then buy an hour of an attorney's time.
Very interesting. Di Patterson, she is a professional gerontologist. And again, the full interview, my full discussion with her, I don't have it posted yet. I'll have it coming week at austinsbigworld.com. Very insightful conversation with a lady who specializes in aging. What a concept, right? Listen, there are a lot of baby boomers and perhaps even some Gen Xers, early Gen Xers, who are sort of panicked. And this is a growing problem throughout the world, quite frankly, but even in the United States of America, it's called retirement preparedness. As a matter of fact, I was just researching this issue myself for one of our projects with the Big World of Small Business program. And I'm trying to remember. It's a very interesting report put together at Bloomberg News. They did a rather exhaustive study on retirement preparedness around the world. In the United States of America, I believe we're number 4 or number 5 in the world for retirement preparedness. The number one, according to Bloomberg News, now I can't attest to all the economic foundations of this country, but according to Bloomberg, the most prepared nation in the world for retirees is, ironically, Brazil. Brazil! But the United States of America, we have spent at a governmental level, and money that has been deducted from your paycheck if you're a worker, that was long ago spent. That was spent years ago before you earned the money. That's how indebted our nation is. And am I calling for panic? Am I saying this because I'm hateful, because I'm spiteful, because I'm saying, you know, overthrow the government? No, that's not the point. If we really do care about the call of Christ on our lives as Christians, and we truly want to serve and to minister to our own families and to those in our local body of believers and our local community, we've got to have our feet planted on the ground. We've got to be seeing economic realities for what they are, and we need to be discerning and learn some things about how to navigate this new terrain. We've entered into a new period economically. We're starting to feel the pain of it now. We will feel the effects even more greatly in the coming years. We can make a difference. We can be there to support people in their time of need. We've got to get tooled up and face the facts first and foremost. That's pretty much why we do this program. It's called Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Austin'sBigWorld.com, our place in cyberspace. Final few moments here on the program. We'll try to squeeze in another call here if we have time, but I did want to get to this on this issue of the age demographics, sort of the competing demographics, if you will. Do you hire an older worker or do you hire a younger worker? I don't know if the disconnect between millennials and their parents, I don't know if there is a disconnect there. I don't know that that disconnect is any worse than, say, the disconnect between boomers and their World War II era parents back, you know, 20, 30 years ago or so. But there is a disconnect there, and it has to do with cultural influences of the millennials that have been very different from their parents and whatnot. But here's some research done, and the folks over at CNBC, again, I really do enjoy that publication. CNBC did some a crunching of numbers and some surveys statisticians and business owners alike all across the country. They've determined, A, millennials require immediate attention in the workplace, more so than older workers do. Now, that may be one of the reasons why older workers are the ones getting hired more often than not, and not the millennials. But the folks at CNBC note that millennials have grown up texting and using social media. They've grown up being accustomed to instantaneous connection, albeit not verbal connection, but they've grown up being accustomed to instantaneous connection and nearly immediate responses each time they post, tweet, text, and so forth. So, therefore, in the workplace, they surmise, millennials expect the same environments. Okay, that's something to consider, and older business owners may find that to be a bit of a problem. Here's another thing, and I have to put myself on this same page, and I'm guilty as the millennials are charged on this one. Just saying, this is actually very humorous. Millennials want casual Friday almost every day. Well, now what in the world could be wrong with that, right? The study found that and the millennials in on the other side of the glass booth here in the studio are scoffing at me. I know what you guys are thinking. The study found that 79% of millennials think they should be allowed to wear jeans to work at least sometimes. Only 60% of boomers think that denim is appropriate in the workplace ever. And a final thought on the millennial generation. Millennials work when they want to work. Yeah, okay. Guess what, though? If you're shooting for an employment position, the employment position, usually by definition, is going to stipulate some specific hours, like, oh, I don't know, 9 to 5, 8 to 4, 7 to 3, noon to 9, whatever. There's going to be some set schedule. Now, what's interesting to consider, and again, I'm always quick to say that those of us who serve in churches, we need to get on board and figure out this freelance independent contract labor market, because people really can make a living doing this. They just need to know how. They need the tools and the training. When you're an independent contractor, just like the research says millennials want to do all the time, you can work on your own schedule. In fact, by legal definition, an independent contractor, freelancer, is somebody who gets the work done at their choosing, not the business's choosing. Lots to think about, wouldn't you say? Listen, thank you for listening. Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business is a production of Hill Communications, LLC. That's my small business. All rights reserved, thanks to the team that makes it happen. Dick Whitworth, Neil Stabem, our producer, Aaron McIntyre. Nathan Grizzle in the studio. Appreciate that, Nathan. Nathan, thank you very much. So also is Luke Larson. I'll be here next weekend. Hope you have a great business week ahead. In the meantime, find me at austinsbigworld.com. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. You can even call our office during weekdays. It's austinsbigworld.com. Have a great business week ahead, and thanks for listening. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. We'll see you next time.